Many years ago, when I was a student, I went to a special seminar on leading Bible studies. And the advice that we were given was that when you look at a Bible passage, you should start off with observation. What does it actually say? What are the words? What was going on? Observation. And only when you'd actually looked at the facts should you move on to interpretation. What does it mean? And in particular, what did it mean to the people at the time? How would they have understood any symbolism that was going on? How would they have interpreted whether something was good or bad, whether it showed you something positive or negative in their culture? Interpretation. So you go from observation to interpretation. And we shouldn't stop until we get to application, because we don't just study the Bible so that we understand it like a literary text. We study it so that it can make a difference to our lives. So we move from observation to interpretation to application. And I'm going to try and do that this evening as we look at this passage, particularly about the Shunammite's son. We don't know her name. We just know she came from Shunem, and so she was a Shunammite. And I can see Sando's just about to put up the first slide. Thank you. Although we don't know much about her, we see two miracles here, and I'm going to cheat and go off to chapter 8 and tell you about some other amazing things that happened to her later on in her life. But there is a lot to observe. It's possible to interpret some of it, and then I'm hoping that we will get some application as we go on. And I've got some questions, and to be honest, I haven't got all the answers. So you may like to take this passage home and think about it and meditate on it and see if you can find more about what it means and how it applies to us and how it's relevant to us. Sandra's looking very puzzled, and I've got lots of lovely pictures to show you, so I won't move on just yet. We had the reading about the other couple of miracles that Elisha did in this chapter 4. And I'd just like to point out that all of the miracles were miracles not to draw attention to Elisha, not to make you think, oh, Elisha was a great prophet. These miracles were all done to help someone else. The power that Elisha had, he used to help other people. That was basically all of his miracles. I think there's 16 in all of them. And they were all really to help someone else. We have Elijah, and he went up on Mount Carmel and that great miracle where the fire fell. And he said, "Let it be known, Lord, that you are God in heaven, and I am your prophet." It drew attention to himself. Elisha was a much more of a sort of a background person in a way. He did these miracles, but he didn't draw attention to himself. Let's have a look at the beginning of the passage. So we're looking on page 370, 2 Kings chapter 4, and beginning at verse 8. I've got my stick. There you go. One day, Elisha went to Shunem, and a well-to-do woman was there who urged him to stay for a meal. So, whenever he passed by, he stopped there to eat. She said to her husband, "I know this man, who often comes our way, is a holy man of God. Let's make a small room on the roof and put in it a bed and a table, a chair and a lamp for him. Then he can stay there whenever he comes to us." And there's a lovely verse in the New Testament, in the Gospel of Matthew. Matthew chapter 10, verse 41 says this: "Whoever welcomes a prophet as a prophet will receive a prophet's reward. And whoever welcomes a righteous person as a righteous person will receive a righteous person's reward." And we see that really in this story of the lady from Shunem. She welcomed a prophet as a prophet. She understood who he was, what his role was, and what he was trying to do, and she welcomed him and made him at home. First of all, it was just one meal. Then it was regular meals. And then finally it was a special apartment where he could stay. And one of the commentators I read about this said, "What a good pattern that is. If you're in ministry, it's very nice to have a meal sometimes offered to you. But it's even nicer to have a regular meal whenever you're in town. But the nicest thing of all is to have something you can count on. Every time you're there, there's somewhere for you to stay." And that's what we try and do as a church in the way that we support our missionaries, the people we've just been praying about that Andy was leading us in. They're people who we try and support regularly so that they know there will always be something every month sent for them. There will be something there for them. As opposed to, occasionally, there'll be a lot of money. And then another occasion, there won't be anything, just because sometimes we do and sometimes we don't. We try and support them, like this woman of Shunem, who supported the man of God and supplied something that he could count on. Every time he was around, he would be able to go to that place, and he'd have a little place on his own where he could do whatever he liked. It was separate. It was an annex. It was a little penthouse flat. He could come and go as he chose. He didn't have to be with the woman of Shunem unless he wanted to. It was just there for him to come and go as he chose. Thank you very much. And so we've got a little illustration of this penthouse flat and her welcoming him in. And there's the verse, Matthew 10:41. And then we move on to what happens when Elisha came, verse 11. So page 370, 2 Kings 4:11. One day, when Elisha came, he went up to his room and lay down there. He said to his servant Gehazi, "Call the Shunammite." So he called her, and she stood before him. Elisha said to him, "Tell her, you have gone to all this trouble for us. Now, what can be done for you? Can we speak on your behalf to the king or to the commander of the army?" She replied, "I have a home among my own people." "What can be done for her?" Elisha asked. Gehazi said, "She has no son, and her husband is old." Then Elisha said, "Call her." So he called her, and she stood in the doorway. "About this time next year," Elisha said, "you will hold a son in your arms." "No, my lord," she objected. "Please, man of God, don't mislead your servant." But the woman became pregnant, and the next year, about that same time, she gave birth to a son, just as Elisha had told her. So Elisha came to his room. He wanted to do something to bless this woman who had blessed him, to give her something in return for what she had done for him. "You've gone to all this trouble. What can be done for you?" And she replied, "I have a home among my own people." And in 2016, that's a very precious thing. We read of thousands, if not millions, of people who would love to be able to say, "I have a home among my own people." But they can't, because they've had to move. They've had to get out because there's war and famine and instability, and they just cannot live there. She was very content. She realized what a blessing it is to be able to say, "I have a home among my own people." "What can be done for her?" Elisha asked. And Gehazi said, "She has no son, and her husband is old." Now, when I read that first, I thought, her husband is too old to give her a son. And that's the problem that Gehazi was explaining. But if you look at it in the culture and the times where they lived, what he was saying is, she has no son, and her husband's about to die and leave her a widow, which means she won't be having anybody to care for her. Because in that society, if you were a widow, It was your son who would support you. You couldn't necessarily keep going as a widow. It's tough as a widow to keep going. You relied on, perhaps, on charity if you didn't have your own children. So when Gehazi said, "Her husband is old," that's what he was meaning. There will be no one to look after her. And he had seen that need. She has no son, and her husband is old. And this part of the story seems to have some very deliberate echoes with the story of Abraham and Sarah. Because in that story, we read about Abraham and Sarah, who showed great hospitality to these three who came, who turned out to be angels from the Lord. And as a result of that hospitality, Sarah had a child, and she didn't believe it was possible for her to have a child, but she did have a child. And some of the language in this passage of the Bible is very, perhaps deliberately, uses the same words and the same phrases. About this time of next year, you will have a son. Exactly the same as had been said to Sarah. About this time of year, you will have a son. The reactions were slightly different. It was not an exact parallel, because Sarah was laughing and saying it's impossible, and the reaction of the Shunammite woman wasn't so much that as, please don't lead me on, don't tease me, don't raise my hopes, because it's just too, I really don't want to go there, to have my hopes raised and then dashed. Please don't say this, man of God, don't mislead your servant. And then we read about the child dying. So this is picking up at verse 18. The child grew, and one day he went out to his father, who was with the reapers. He said to his father, "My head, my head." His father told the servant, "Carry him to his mother." After the servant had lifted him up and carried him to his mother, the boy sat on her lap until noon, and then he died. She went up and laid him on the bed of the man of God, then shut the door and went out. She called to her husband and said, "Please send me one of the servants and a donkey so I can go up to the man of God quickly and return." "Why go to him today?" he asked. "It's not the new moon or the Sabbath." "That's all right," she said. She saddled the donkey and said to her servant, "Lead on. Don't slow down for me unless I tell you." So she set out and came to the man of God at Mount Carmel. So this is a day when it was harvest time. He was with the reapers. The sun went out with the reapers. And I guess because it was harvest time, it was all hands active. Everybody and all the servants would have been out there doing the harvesting. And so when the child said, "My head, my head," one servant was sent to take him back to his mother, and everybody else kept on reaping. The father carried on, and all the other servants kept on reaping. And when the mother then said she wanted to have a donkey, she asked for one donkey and one servant. She asked for the bare minimum for her, because she understood everybody was going to be busy. They had to get the harvest in. One donkey just for her, and I guess the servant had to run. I don't know. But she asked for the bare minimum. And the son had died, and she was going to go and see the man of God about it. There was a tourist in 2012 who took a picture from Mount Carmel looking over to the other mountain, which I think is Mount Moriah, not sure. But he said there is a town which is no longer known exactly as Shunem, but is thought to be where Shunem was. And you can see very clearly that if you're on Mount Carmel, you can see all the way to Shunem, and you could see someone who was coming towards you from Shunem. So when we read on verse 25, she set out and came to the man of God at Mount Carmel. When he saw her in the distance, the man of God said to his servant Gehazi, "Look, there's the Shunammite. Run to meet her and ask her, 'Are you all right? Is your husband all right? Is your child all right?'" "Everything is all right," she said. When she reached the man of God at the mountain, she took hold of his feet. Gehazi came over to push her away, but the man of God said, "Leave her alone. She is in bitter distress, but the Lord has hidden it from me and has not told me why." "Did I ask you for a son, my Lord?" she said. "Didn't I tell you? Don't raise my hopes." And I found a picture on the internet painted some time ago, which shows a picture of Elisha and the woman and Gehazi. And rather amusingly, it looks like the Gehazi is trying to put his hands around the woman's neck to drag him away from Elisha's feet. Sorry, I just skipped over something there. Elisha, when this happened, he said, "Leave her alone." When she reached the man of God at the mountain, she took hold of his feet. Gehazi came over to push her away, but the man of God said, "Leave her alone. She is in bitter distress, but the Lord has hidden it from me and has not told me why." I came across a commentary that said, "Wouldn't it be good if nowadays there are a few more people in the church who are willing to say, 'The Lord has hidden it from me, and I don't know why,' instead of pretending that they know everything and everything that they say is what the Lord has told them to do." The Lord has hidden it from me. There's a verse in Deuteronomy that says, "The secret things belong to the Lord our God, but the things that are revealed belong to us and to our children forever, so that we can follow God." There are some things that God keeps secret, and even from somebody who did as many miracles as Elisha, and who was known as a prophet, who was known as a seer, somebody who could see what was going to happen, he didn't know everything. "The Lord has hidden it from me and has not told me why." So Gehazi thinks this is dreadful, and we sort of think, don't we, of the disciples when the children came to Jesus and the disciples said, you know, "Clear out the way," and Jesus said, "Let the little children come to me." This woman came and she clasped Elisha's feet. And in that culture, that would have meant, "You have got to listen to me." He wasn't just bowing at his feet. If we look at the end of the story, which is down in verse 46 and 47, she came in, fell at his feet, and bowed to the ground. Then she took her son and went out. That was a sign of reverence. She bowed to the ground in front of his feet. This was not a sign so much of reverence as a plea, a very desperate one. "You have got to do something for me. I am desperate. I am not going to let you go." It wasn't just, you know, "I'm showing my respect." It was a lot more urgent and more desperate. And as Gehazi saw it, a lot more presumptive, really. Why should she come and say, "You have got to do something," to this great man of God? And so he was going to push her away. But Elisha said no. He recognized that she was really, really desperate about something. And this is similar in a way to Hannah. If you remember the story of Hannah, who had no children, and she went to the temple to pray, and Eli the priest saw her praying. And he saw her praying, and she was so fervent, he saw at one stage, he saw her lips moving, but there was no sound coming out, and he thought she was drunk. But she said, "No, it's not because I'm drunk, it's because I'm just so desperate. I am praying out of anguish of heart. I have been praying out of my great anguish and grief." And that's what Elisha saw in this woman from Shunem. She was overwrought with grief. Perhaps she was so grief-stricken that she had forgotten what she ought to be doing and the reverence and the respect that she should be showing. And so Gehazi is instructed to go and lay the staff on the boy's face. So if we pick up the story in verse 28. "Did I ask you for a son, my lord?" she said. "Didn't I tell you, don't raise my hopes?" Elisha said to Gehazi, "Tuck your cloak into your belt, take my staff in your hand and run. Don't greet anyone you meet, and if anyone greets you, do not answer. Lay my staff on the boy's face." He was sent off post haste. He was sent off as fast as possible. It would have been traditional and normal that if you met somebody on the way, you would say a greeting to them, and it would be impolite to rush past them. But he said, don't greet anyone. If anyone greets you, don't answer. Lay my staff on the boy's face. So off he rushed to do that. Gehazi went on ahead and laid the staff on the boy's face. But there was no sound or response. So Gehazi went back to meet Elisha and told him, the boy has not awakened. The boy has not awakened. It's interesting, I think, verse 28. The woman never actually said, my son has died. She never said anything. She just said, didn't I tell you? Didn't I say, don't raise my hopes? And Elisha sends the staff ahead, and I don't know whether Gehazi thought that the boy was dead. He said, the boy has not awakened. There's some interesting words used here when it says there was no sound or response. They are some of the same words in the Hebrew language as was used in the story of Elijah on the top of Mount Carmel, when the priests of Baal were dancing around and calling on their God, and it said there was no answer. There was no response. It's the same words here. There was no voice. There was no response. Nothing happened. That's not to say that anything pagan was going on. It's just to say nothing happened. There wasn't anything, any sign that any difference had been made by putting this staff on the boy. And then Elisha comes to the house. So we pick it up at verse 32. When Elisha reached the house, there was the boy lying dead on his couch. He went in, shut the door on the two of them, and prayed to the Lord. Then he got on the bed and lay on the boy, mouth to mouth, eyes to eyes, hands to hands. As he stretched himself out on him, the boy's body grew warm. Elisha turned away and walked back and forth in the room, and then got onto the bed and stretched out on him once more. The boy sneezed seven times and opened his eyes. Elisha summoned Gehazi and said, call the Shunammite. And he did. When she came, he said, take your son. She came in, fell at his feet, and bowed to the ground. Then she took her son and went out. Some of this seems to echo what happened when the widow's son died in the story about Elijah. In the story of Elijah in 1 Kings 17, we read the son of the woman who owned the house became ill. We read Elijah took him to the upper room and laid him on his bed. Very similar, an upper room, laid him on his bed. Then he cried out to the Lord. Very similar, we see Elisha prayed, so did Elijah. And then Elijah stretched himself out on the boy three times and cried out to the Lord. And then we read the boy's life returned to him and he was returned to his mother. Some similarities, some differences. In the case of Elijah, we're told what his actual prayer was, what words he used. In the case of Elisha, we're not. In case of Elijah, he stretched himself out three times. In the case of Elisha, two times. So it's not exactly the same, but some parallels there with Elijah. But both cases, I have to say, it wasn't instant. And it took a lot of effort. And one of the things I've never thought about before is when it says that Elijah stretched himself out on the boy three times, and Elisha stretched himself out on the boy twice. What does it mean? What happened in between? And there are some people who think that actually it was tiring work. He couldn't just sort of stay stretched out on him until he came to life. They're actually worn out and had to stop and have a rest and maybe walk around a bit and then do it again. It wasn't a, you know, just come back to life. Very different from Jesus and Lazarus. Lazarus, come forth. That was it. Done. And other times when he said, you know, sit up to the girl, or when he just touched a coffin. With Jesus, it seemed to be instant. With Elijah and Elisha, an amazing result, but it wasn't instant. And even if you read about Paul and Eutychus, that was not instant either. It took some prayer, some time. And now some questions. And I warn you, I don't have the answers to all these questions. Why did it have to be so complicated? Why couldn't it be just like Jesus? Why couldn't Elisha just say, be raised up and the boy come back to life? Why did the child die in the first place? Why did the Lord hide it from Elisha? Why didn't that staff work? And that's the one that I still don't have an answer to. I don't know why he even tried if it wasn't going to work. Why did he send this staff in the hand of Gehazi to be put on his face and there was no response? It was no better than praying to Baal in that sense. Why didn't the first prayer work? Because, okay, if the staff didn't work, then he prayed. Why didn't that prayer work? So, lots of questions. But I'm going to cheat now and go over to 2 Kings chapter 8. And some of this starts to answer some of our questions. 2 Kings chapter 8 on page 375, and beginning at the first verse. Now, Elisha had said to the woman whose son he had restored to life, go away with your family and stay for a while wherever you can, because the Lord has decreed a famine in the land that will last 7 years. The woman proceeded to do as the man of God said. She and her family went away and stayed in the land of the Philistines for 7 years. At the end of the 7 years, she came back from the land of the Philistines and went to appeal to the king for her house and land. The king was talking to Gehazi, the servant of the man of God, and had said, tell me about all the great things Elisha has done. Just as Gehazi was telling the king how Elisha had restored the dead to life, the woman whose son Elisha had brought back to life came to appeal to the king for her house and land. Gehazi said, this is the woman, my lord the king. This is her son, who Elisha restored to life. The king asked the woman about it, and she told him. Then he assigned an official to her case. There's a caseworker, look at that. And said to him, give back everything that belonged to her, including all the income from her land, from the day she left the country until now. And one of the commentators said, and I wish I was as clever as this, do you realize that God is no one's debtor. The woman of Shunem had given food to Elisha, the servant, the man of God. And Elisha's prophecy had enabled the woman to be fed. So in the time of famine, she'd gone somewhere else because Elisha had given a prophecy and said, there's going to be a famine, go and make sure you're fed. The woman had supplied a place and a property for the man of God. And through Elisha's work, God supplied a place for her to live. When she came back, and there were presumably squatters on the land, it doesn't give us the details, but she had to go to the king to ask for her land back. God gave her a place to live. You can't outgive God. She gave and she received. And I think that's just lovely. Just as Gehazi was telling the king, it seems to be one of those God incidents that she arrived just as Gehazi was telling the king, do you know there was a person whose son was raised to life by Elisha? Oh, here she is. That's the woman. Is that really? Tell me all about it. So, perhaps if we look and learn some lessons from hindsight, we can see that if the woman hadn't been through all that trouble of having a son who died and was raised to life, perhaps she wouldn't have found favor in the eyes of the king when she came to present her case. And we can't see it at the time when we go through troubles. Why am I going through these troubles? Why does it have to be so hard? Why does it have to be so complicated? But sometimes we get to see with hindsight, well, if it hadn't happened that way, this wouldn't have happened and that wouldn't have happened. So there is a little glimmer of understanding that we can glean from looking at this with hindsight. But going back to the story, I'd like to see if we can learn some lessons from the woman of Shunem. She did support the man of God. She urged him to stay, first of all, for a meal, then to stay regularly for meals. She persuaded her husband to build a room for him. So she was a person who we can see as an example. She supported the ministry of God. She supported the man of God. And there's a lesson for us to learn. And she was content. She said, I have a home among my own people. Godliness with contentment is great gain. And we are encouraged to be content in what God has given us. And yet, I believe that if we look at this story in its context, the immediate preceding passage is about the widow's olive oil. And in that story, the widow was told to ask for jars to be filled with olive oil. And Elisha said, don't ask for just a few. And if I look at this woman of Shunem, I wonder if she, although she was content, I wonder if she was a bit complacent. I will see things in my own life and I think maybe I'm too scared to ask God for something greater than what I have. What if he lets me down? What if I get my hopes up and then they're dashed? Am I not just like this woman of Shunem? I wonder if she had asked for six sons, if she could have had six sons. So yes, she was content, but perhaps in a spiritual way, we're told to don't ask for just a few blessings. Don't ask for just a few blessings. God has lots of blessings for us. And that seems to be one of the messages of Elisha. Without ruining the story, at the end of the life of Elisha, we shall see that again. Don't ask for just a few. More lessons from the woman of Shunem. She had faith. Isn't it amazing she didn't bury the boy? Sometimes we know these stories so well we just don't notice. But that was amazing. What would you do if your child dropped dead? Would you say, oh, I'm going to leave them here. I'm going to go 25 miles down the road and have a chat with a man of God? Or would you bury them? She had enormous faith. And we see in this story that actually her faith was growing, because at the beginning of the story, she didn't have faith that she could have a son. At the end of the story, she had faith that her son could be resurrected from the dead. Her faith had been growing. Is our faith growing? Do we have great faith in God? And yet, was her faith a little bit limited? I do wonder if, because I've been thinking about this staff, I do wonder if she'd had more faith if the staff would have worked. She seemed to have had faith in Elisha, but only in Elisha. She had to be with Elisha. She just didn't want to know Gehazi. Elisha was training Gehazi up to be his successor. If we think that what should have happened, as far as we can work out, is Elijah, Elisha, Gehazi. And he was training him up and he was involving him in it. But she didn't want to know. She only believed that God could work through Elisha. She didn't believe God could work through other things like the staff. So maybe, what do we learn from the woman of Shunem? And what do we learn from Gehazi? We see that he had a perception that Elisha didn't. Elisha said, what can we do? And perhaps it seemed obvious to Gehazi. He said, well, she's got no son. He did seem to have an ability to see possibilities. He was a trainee prophet. And yet, he doesn't seem to have been very sensitive. He didn't recognize, like Elisha did, that this woman was in great distress. And he seemed to be too concerned with making sure that all protocol was obeyed and, you know, she didn't get too forward or anything like that. And perhaps he was just too concerned about the wrong things. Perhaps as a trainee prophet, he was dead keen on miracles like barren women having children. And that was a good idea and that's why he suggested it. Perhaps he was too keen to be the only one who had the face-to-face contact with Elisha because, you know, he was the number two, he was the up and coming, he was the going to be the prophet next. And in a sense, we can see in the opposite of what we see of the woman of Shunem, who seemed to have grown in her faith through the story, we see Gehazi perhaps going from good to bad. I know some people will tell you that everything Gehazi did was bad. I think that's overstating it, but perhaps the seeds were there of him just being focused on the wrong things. And then what can we learn from Elisha? Well, the first thing that strikes is his sheer humility. The Lord has hidden it from me. He didn't stand on pretenses and make up some sort of thing about him, why he didn't understand. He said, the Lord has hidden it from me. And in fact, we can also see a little bit of him growing even during this, because the first miracle, which is the miracle of a birth to a barren woman, he says, you're going to have a son. And there's no mention of God will give you a son. And in a sense, that could be taken as, I am going to do a miracle so that you have a son. It wasn't pointing the glory to God. And here we read, the Lord has hidden it from me. I am dependent on God. He was acknowledging that. And he was growing in humility. And when he went to pray, it says he shut the door. That just reminds me of Jairus' daughter, and Jesus went in and shut the door. It wasn't to be, you know, look at me doing this miracle. It was, he's just going to shut the door and he was going to get on with it. He was really concerned about the woman, and he was really concerned that the child should be healed. He was very sensitive. You have gone to all this trouble for us, he said to the woman. The other thing I notice is when he was up that mountain and he saw the woman from Shunem coming. Now, Gehazi was there with him. We don't realize here that Gehazi noticed anything. Gehazi had to be told by Elisha. And in a sense, I think it reminds me of the parable of the son, the prodigal son. And the father saw the son coming when he was still at a great distance. And the only way we look at that is to say, well, you can't see something at great distance without your looking. He must have been looking. He must have been looking over there and thinking, I wonder how she is. I wonder how she's getting on. And he was concerned and looking out. So that's why he noticed that she was coming while she was still in the distance. He was a sensitive. And he noticed in what bitter distress she was. And he persevered. He tried the staff. He tried a prayer. He tried lying on the boy. He tried lying on the boy another time. He kept on until the child was alive. And he did this miracle for, not for his own sake, to make himself look great. It was to help someone else. The other thing he did is he gave opportunities for Gehazi to learn, to be involved. He didn't do it all and say, you know, you just watch there. He was training him up and he was encouraging him to be involved in the work of God. So a lot of lessons we can learn from Elisha. So I haven't got the answers to all the questions, but I hope that will help us, because as we were singing at the beginning, of just before I spoke, it's the same God from everlasting to everlasting. We have the same God as the God of Elisha. And let's trust him for his power, and let's have the same faith as the woman of Shunem grew to have, that God can do great things. And let's not ask for just a few blessings. Amen.